Hey, Los Angeles. Are you looking for unique 4th of July plans for you and your friends or family? LA's greatest rivalry returns to Rose Bowl Stadium for a July 4th edition of the El Tráfico soccer matchup as the LA Galaxy return to their original home to defend their turf against LAFC. Last year, a record crowd of over 82,000 fans were on hand to witness the Galaxy victory. That's July 4th at Rose Bowl Stadium. Guaranteed fireworks both on and off the field and a celebration for all of LA. LA Galaxy versus LAFC, the Rose Bowl edition. Tickets at lagalaxy.com/tickets.
Welcome to Now. No opportunity wasted. I'm your host, Angelica Ross. So, now what? Well, as you can see, I'm coming to you from downtown Los Angeles, California today. I'm going to be speaking at the 2024 Lead with Pride Summit in Anaheim, California for the Association of California School Administrators. And the theme for this summit is Educate, Act, Transform, uniting for LGBTQIA plus inclusivity in all schools. And I'll be giving the keynote address entitled Eat, Honey. You know, Educate, Act, and Transform. Of course, I took their own title and turned it into Eat, Honey. So listen, across the country, school administrators are faced with challenges when it comes to being able to support their LGBTQ plus students and to create environments where all students, regardless of identity, feel safe. All right, so today is March 17th, and our word for the day is brought to you again by my mentor, Daisaku Ikeda. Quote, happiness doesn't exist on the far side of distant mountains. It is within you, yourself. Not you, however, sitting in idle passivity. It is to be found in the vibrant dynamic of your own life as you struggle to challenge and overcome one obstacle after another, as you clamber up perilous ridge in pursuit of that which lies beyond. Every year, I vow through this practice and following in their footsteps to foster a community of capable people, to become leaders in society who are true champions of equality and human rights. On this point, we don't compromise, okay? But listen, I'm not ever going to sit up here and tell you that I'm perfect. But what I will say is that practice doesn't just make perfect. Practice is perfection. We have to keep challenging ourselves and each other to do better. We can't force anyone to do better, but we can commit to only being in community with people who are willing to be accountable to what it means to be in healthy community with one another. As Nichiren Buddhists, we encourage each other to have a consistent practice and to study the Lotus Sutra and the writings of Nichiren Daishonin, who was a 12th century priest who ultimately was exiled because he would not go along with the priesthood's corrupt relationship with the military and the government. Sound familiar? This practice stems from the words of the Buddha in the Lotus Sutra and the writings of Nichiren Daishonin, as well as then all of the SGI presidents, the founding president, Tsunesaburo Makoguchi, after him, Jose Toda and Daisaku Ikeda, basically found ways to spread the wisdom of the Lotus Sutra in ways that everybody could basically understand, no matter their level of education. But ultimately, we encourage each person to study the sutra for themselves and to practice for themselves while building a community of capable people who are ready to awaken to their Buddha nature and who want to be a part of a community where folks are doing the same. All right, so today's episode, I'm talking with Andrea Jenkins, the first Black trans woman to ever be elected into public office in the United States. Now, I've known Andrea for over a decade. So this conversation was pre-taped. So you'll notice that this interview took place before I actually announced publicly that I would be transitioning into politics. Andrea is a friend, and she is one of the first people I told that I would be making this transition. So take a listen. Today, I'm talking with one of my OGs, one of my OGs in the movement, someone who I have witnessed not only make change for our country, for our communities, but also someone who's just been making history. Please welcome to now, Council President Andrea Jenkins. Welcome, Andrea. How are you?
Hello, Angelica. I'm doing great. It's such an honor to be on screen with you. And I just can't say how incredibly inspired I am by your all the things that you're doing, particularly your engagement in entertainment world, taking the whole thing by storm. You doing television, screen, Broadway, girl, like all the cheers.
Now, wait a minute. Okay, listen. Okay,
I got a recording career thing going on too, I think. Yeah,
you know, I got a little music happening too, exactly. Right. But you know, this podcast is not about me. This is, you know, this podcast, No Opportunity Wasted, is something that I have launched in order to sort of centralize my focus and my advocacy for the everyday person, my advocacy for human rights, yes, for trans people, yes, for Black people, Indigenous folks, folks who have disabilities, incarcerated folks, folks with dealing with other illnesses, HIV. I mean, you name all of the things. I am trying my best to become the best kind of advocate for all human life.
For human rights.
Yeah. For human rights and human life. And so this podcast, No Opportunity Wasted, is one where I speak to everyday people, celebrities, but as well as world leaders and national leaders like yourself, who are not wasting the opportunities that have been presented to them in their lives and who are not folding from the challenges that they've been faced with. Because, baby, I know you can tell us that, you know, the path comes with its challenges. Am I right?
The thorn, you know, you get a beautiful rose and it smells really pretty, but it's got thorns in it.
Yes,
all
baby.
Way up and down, and they
yes,
hurt,
baby.
Too.
Yes, baby. I remember, you know, we spent so much time. Like, I remember you invited me to, I want to say it was the first trans summit that you
first
had.
First one, yeah.
Very first
this
one.
This is year 10 now, Angelica.
So it's still going on, right?
It's still going on. Oh. We're going to have Miss Major as our
my goodness.
10-year anniversary keynote.
That's incredible.
But you kicked the whole thing off.
That was incredible. And it was such an amazing moment too. And it was like, you know, I did a little speaking. I even played music. I think I played the piano and played one of my songs. So, you know, the one thing that I'm so fortunate about is I've been able to have people like yourself, people I've been in community with, witness that I am both a grassroots organizer and someone who truly cares about community, but also I'm a creative, and I couldn't, you know, hide that if I tried to. So, you know, in a world where so many of us are being forced into boxes, how do you balance saving time for your own personal, like, you know, hobbies and enjoyment, but also putting that cape on and saving the world like you do?
Yeah. You know, that's a really good question. It's a tough question because, you know, saving the world is a 24/7 job, right? But Angelica, I represent the district that George Floyd was murdered in. And when that happened, there was just this explosion of artistic creativity that happened all around the city. You know, our city was on fire and there were riots and they broke out all the windows and a lot of the department stores, etc. But then when they started putting up those boards on the stores' windows, people just instantly started painting them with all kinds of messages.
Wow.
Messages of resistance, messages of hope, messages of love, messages of fighting back, images of George Floyd. You know that image of George Floyd that has now been all around the world? Like that came up the very next day after the murder happened. And I don't know what it was, but it hit me too. And so I think a little bit of joy and solitude in creating. As you know, I'm a creative too. I'm a poet.
Yes,
playwright.
Yes, an amazing poet. Absolutely.
Thank you. And I got to. I had a chance last summer to work with Lady Dane, and I wrote a play. And so that creative outlet has been what's kind of my place,
and
space of joy.
It's so important, as you, I mean, that we always continue to create. And again, one of obviously the things that I think us as trans folks have understood is the divinity in co-creation of our lives, you know, and what that looks like and how we manifest our essence into this world.
I do want to just note that there is a group, they call themselves Memorialize the Movement. So they've collected all of those thousands, really, boards and canvases and sometimes whole walls, and preserving it for future.
That's amazing.
Future viewing, for future inspiration, etc. I love that you call your podcast Now, taking opportunities right now, because that's what we have. I mean, we only get one shot, right? And you know, you mentioned yourself being a grassroots organizer. You know, I met you through Trans Tech. That's, you know, when I came into your...
Traveling through the conferences and stuff.
Right, exactly. Into your impact and your aura and your pouring into community. And that those are the kinds of opportunities that I think people have to take advantage of. And when you can get some training, you can get some skills to be able to create your life, the life that you want to have. And that's such it's a metaphor for trans lives, right? Because we've been able to transform our lives into what we need it to be to work for us. So
and I want to talk about, because I think sometimes in hindsight we talk about these things. I mean, you being the first Black trans woman elected to office in the United States. And so a lot of times, you know, like there's a lot of times I'm quoted in a lot of media where I say, like, I really don't like when folks talk about me being the first when it comes to like television or when it comes to different things or whatever, because for me, that's not really, I mean, it is groundbreaking and whatnot. But what I know is that I stand on the shoulders of so many talented people who have never been let in the door.
And so me being the first is really just due to a lot of factors. Yes, I'm talented and I'm ready for that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that.
Right.
But also,
but somebody was punching that door. Somebody was kicking that door.
Before I was even, and made it that much easier for me to get in. So, but when it comes to you being the first elected to office, I do have to pause on the weight of that, because that truly, is, I know, was no easy feat. So talk to me about, because you've been serving for a while now. How long have you been?
So we've been in office for 6 years.
And 6 years.
6 years, yeah.
And so talk to me about, let's go back 6 years. So talk to me about how you, when you decided, what was going on when you decided, I'm going to run for office?
Yeah, I mean, it was, so for one factor was this orange dude that was a reality TV star had just won. So that was a factor. I'm like, oh my God, democracy is under attack. Like, we got to do something. And I didn't even know at the time how deep it was going to be. But I mean, this guy is really, really, really bad news, Angelica, to be just.
But you know what? But to point that out, though, because I know that, because I want you to continue. But but to point that out, yes, Trump is bad news, bad guy. But what I hate most about the situation is that a lot of white people, a lot of white America is propping him up to be the scapegoat when Donald Trump is actually a reflection of white America.
You hit it right on the head, young lady.
And so during when we're having these moments, because all of this is a reflection, this is what I know. Donald Trump starts to get into power. He's running for office. People want to put their heads in the sand. People want to, you know, detach them. White people want to detach themselves from that. Some of us want to detach ourselves from the circus that is that all of the time.
Yeah.
But none of us can divorce ourselves from the reflection. And so what the reflection is saying is, who are you? In the time of this chaos, in the time of our democracy being in attack, as you say, a big mirror is being held up. What you look like? What are you doing in this moment?
Who are you?
And what were you doing in this moment, Andrea? Right. What were you doing?
I was looking at the landscape, and this has been my thing all throughout my life, Angelica. I want to show up where people don't expect Black trans women to be, right? So, you know, when I first came to City Hall 20 plus years ago, I was, quote, the first trans person ever to be a policy aide, not Black, not
trans, period.
Right. The first trans person, period, to be in that space. You know, at my, you know, I teach poetry at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. I was the first trans person to step into the classroom there. So the point I'm trying to make is I always want to keep pushing that envelope to be in spaces where Black, trans, queer, identified people are not expected to be.
Or our voices are missing, yes.
And our voices are completely necessary in those spaces.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have those opportunities. And so this was yet another one of those opportunities. You know, I felt like I had really you know, I had been a policy aide in the ward that I got elected in. And so I knew the people, I knew the issues, I knew the concerns. It was an open seat. My predecessor had decided it was time for her to do something else. And so I stepped into that void. And, you know, it was called the year of the woman candidate, but it was also called the year of the trans candidate. Because there were a number of trans people running for public office that year.
Wow.
And right here in Minneapolis, two of us got elected, myself and Philippe.
Yes, Philippe Cunningham, right?
Philippe Cunningham, exactly.
Yes. A trans man, right?
A trans man, a black trans man.
Look at that.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was really...
But I know that he also, I think experienced just a lot of sort of like attacks and drama once he got in.
He did. Absolutely. Yeah. As did I, but I mean, it was really, I think, even more challenging for Philippe in many ways. So there was this kind of movement that was happening across the nation of trans people running for office. And, I am thrilled and, you know, delighted to be the first. But I think the bigger story is that I'm the only black trans woman. And that's sad, right? We need more black trans women in New Orleans, in New York City, in Chicago, where Precious was
Andrea,
running for office.
Precious is, and obviously we've known Precious for so long, and, you know, Precious is definitely on her way. You know, I've been so fortunate to be a part of this movement for so long and to witness you go into office, to witness Sarah McBride go into office on the East Coast, to see, folks like, again, folks all over the place stepping up for office. And I have to say, I have not said this yet on this podcast.
But I am running for office.
Yes, I am. I am. You heard it here first.
Wow.
That's a part of the plan that has been like going behind the scenes for a little bit. But basically, I am moving back into the home that I own in Decatur, Georgia.
Okay.
And I will be, I won't say which office I'll be running for quite yet. But what I will say is that I know that people know, I sometimes I know that there needs to be a space and time where people, I got to give people time to continually get to know who I am for real, beyond the television, beyond the other things. Now, we know that there's lots of intersections of black community, white LGBT community, trans folks or whatever, who know who I am and who I've been well before television.
Right.
But obviously, there's a lot of people who were only introduced to me from American Horror Story and from, Pose and things like that. I think that folks are really surprised in the ways in which I moved through Hollywood unafraid, because my value was never created by that space. And so as I leave that space, especially as we're on strike right now, I have to say that I've been okay, because I've always been outside the box in myself and who
you
I
got
am.
Your hands going all kind of directions.
All kind of directions. So they're not going to control my spotlight. Their green light doesn't green light my life.
Exactly.
So what I know is that I felt like the industry was kind of trying to say to me, almost like the shut up and sing, shut up and act.
Shut up and dance. Yeah.
Shut up and dance. And also portray liberal, say the right things, but don't go too far. Don't talk too much about white supremacy. Don't go too far in these spaces. But what
I read your interviews. I see you, girl. You be bringing the noise, the fire.
Well, what I know is that my voice for me is more valuable unscripted. Than anything that they could ever write for me. And listen, I am a creative, and I would love to continue to participate on many stages. And some of them are going to be ones that I, produce myself. You know what I'm saying? Because that is where we are in the industry right now with creativity, is creatives learning how to sort of produce their own show, their own art, so they don't have to go to a middleman that is not at the level of integrity or seeing things the same way that they see them.
And so it is suck folks up all like, the resources while you do all the work. So why should that be a thing, right?
Like, yeah, so it is people like you that truly have inspired me to say, you know what? I can do this. So I really am asking you, you know, truly.
Whatever
like,
I can do to help, please, Angelica.
I'm going to be tapping on your shoulder like all the time. Because especially like, that's what I want to know is like, when you were running, mm-hmm. now, and you're running as an open, as it was not like you're hiding the fact that you're trans. So mm-hmm. as you're openly running as a trans person in a place like Minneapolis,
right?
What were some of the challenges that you saw during the during your campaigning and as you were racing?
Well, this is what I told my campaign team all along. We are always fighting against three opponents: sexism, racism, and transphobia. So if we have that as our key opponent, then we know how to fight those battles, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're not, when racism shows up, when transphobia shows up, we're not going to be sidelined by that, because we know that that's our opponents. So that I think was a really important aspect for me. But then just being, as you said, just being open about my identity, I think that's what really attracted a lot of people to our campaign, is the authenticity that I brought, the reality that, you know, when I stand up, I'm not just standing up for Black trans women, though that is my ultimate goal, but I'm also standing up for disabled people. I'm standing up for Latinx communities, for women whose struggle is intrinsically connected to the trans struggle, because it's
bodily autonomy.
Who has autonomy over one's own body, right?
Yeah.
And so bringing all of those issues together, I think, is an important concept, the intersectionality, but the authenticity, being yourself, being unapologetic about who you are, is, I think, what brings people to the table. Now, I do know in, say, I can't say her last name, but she is leading the voter registration drive in Georgia, and a few other amazing politicians down there. Stacey Abrams.
Yes. I've been talking to Renita Shannon down there, too, because mm-hmm. she's been holding the fire, especially she's been in the media lately because of the whole Trump and the whole voting thing. And she was she was part of the folks that were sort of holding them accountable. You know, so I know a lot of folks there on the ground doing a lot of great work, but I also know that, unfortunately, and I don't know if maybe, I guess you might experience this obviously too in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. like in Georgia, there's an obvious, it's the South, number one. It's still the South. And so there's certain counties that are still Clayton. You know, there's certain counties that are still
like
kind of.
You can't even be in after dark. You gotta go.
Yeah, sundown.
Get on down the road.
You know, sundown towns. Yes, exactly. And so, you know, one of the things that is drawing me to going back and to rolling up my sleeves is that I think that so many people have been loosely calling Atlanta like the Black Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And what I am worried about is the complacency. What I am worried about is the 40 acres and a mule mentality about how much more accessible land might be to Black folks in the state of Georgia, you know, due to things being different, you know, than they are in the rest of the country, but still not where they need to be. Because if it were Black Hollywood, in the that's Black Hollywood, then I guess y'all saying that's White Hollywood. So if in the White Hollywood, they got marijuana stores that look like Apple stores.
Right, I know.
Their cousins aren't getting arrested for weed still. You know, but the people who have privilege in you know, the Black people who have economic and academic privilege still experience something different than those in the more rural parts and those who, you know, don't have access to those privileges.
Sure.
You know, so it's one of it's those things like that that make me, and especially now, and I just saw in Georgia, they are continuing with the ban on gender affirming care for trans youth. Are you seeing some of the same sort of issues in Minneapolis?
You know, so thank goodness, and I'm knocking on wood, that so we have what we call this trifecta. The governor is a Democrat, the Senate is Democratic, the House is Democratic. So Minnesota is a state that protects healthcare for trans and gender nonconforming young people. We're seeing people moving here from all over the country, from Florida, from Arkansas, from Tennessee. But
that's right. I think I read somewhere that you were becoming like the safe city.
Yeah, we are. And so we led on that here at the city, and then the state picked it up.
Wow.
So we haven't been, but it's literally, I just read an article yesterday that there is a community just right outside of Minneapolis that's trying to ban a book called Genderqueer. You know, it's a novel. It was written by a genderqueer person, but they want to ban that book out of the schools. So we're this close.
You're not in the clear. You're not in the clear.
Right? We're not in the clear at all. But we are fighting back. We do. This is a sanctuary state, a sanctuary city for trans and gender nonconforming people. But we got to hold on to that. We can't. Yeah. As you said, we can't get complacent. We can't allow this precarious status that we hold to be decimated, because it only takes one vote. And we are just like Alabama or Mississippi.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Our democracy is not something that we can take for granted. I'm looking, as I see your image and I look at you, first of all, just as gorgeous as ever.
Thank you, dear.
I feel like the more you have been such a community servant and living your purpose, I feel like you just continue to glow. I feel like this glow is coming off of you. But as I look at your image and I see the flag behind you, and I see the flag, you know, in so many, obviously it's the flag of our country. It's the United States. But I can't help but observe as consistent as the imagery is,
sure,
the experience is not united. Do you see a path towards that ideal? You know, I mean, I guess that's why we all of us kind of jump into these positions in the first place, is to move towards that ideal. But do you see, I mean, because, you know, I'm thinking about the internet, and I'm thinking about watching on Facebook and watching as folks in Egypt totally stormed their state, basically, and just like, and just said no more, you know, sort of, and changed things. Because, you know, it was so upsetting to me is that some folks would think about history, because it's not told so correctly and so well, that some folks would think about history and think that we as Black people have never tried to organize, have never tried to fight back. And they erase all of the work that folks have been doing over all of this time. Do you envision a time that things topple and that we somehow unite from shore to shore, from state to state when it comes to bodily autonomy and no longer need sanctuary cities.
I do. And one of the reasons why, before I could jump into that, though, I do want to just mention something about this flag. Because this particular flag was given to me by Congresswoman Ilhan Omar.
Oh, wow.
And she flew this flag over the United States Capitol on June 28th in honor of Pride History Month and to recognize the contributions of Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera. And so this flag flew over the United States Capitol on June 28th in honor of Pride. And then she gifted it to me. And if you can see, there's a letter hanging behind the flag with all the information that was there
from that
day. So I just wanted to mention that. I mean,
yes, that's beautiful.
It's not just the flag. If it wasn't for that, it's a piece of history, and I probably wouldn't have a United States flag in my office if it wasn't for that. Maybe, who knows? But that was really significant. But the other piece that you brought forward, do I see it? A time and a space, I do. And the reason why I can say that is I know, Angelica, that our ancestors who were picking cotton and tobacco and fixing the horses and building wrought iron fences and building the White House and the Vice President's house, which I got to go visit Kamala Harris last week at her house, which was...
Wow. Were you at the hip-hop celebration?
I didn't go to the hip-hop celebration, but she invited 200 Black women
Wow.
who were the first in their community to be whatever and to come hang out with her at her house. And
that's amazing.
Like, wow, that's incredible. But our ancestors dreamed that.
Mm-hmm.
They dreamed that you would be playing the lead role in Chicago on Broadway.
Absolutely.
They dreamed that I would be the president of the Minneapolis City Council.
Absolutely.
And here's the other thing I know, Angelica, for a fact. You know, and I was born and raised in Chicago, and I grew up socialized as a little boy, but I always knew that my real true identity was as a Black woman, and that identity would come to fruition. And I've been able to change my life to reflect that reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you have too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And millions, not just a few of us, there's millions of trans people all around the country who have been able to make that change too. And so, yes, I do see a place where that will be our reality. It may not be in my lifetime, but I do see that.
You know, I think that that is the part of accepting the call for this work is understanding that not only are your that your contribution is adding to a long line of work that's being done, and to understand that the work is going to there's still going to be work that needs to be done well after you. And but I have to say there's a special place in my heart for those who do as much as they can now.
Now. N-O-W. Yes,
absolutely. I am just so grateful for you, Andrea Jenkins. I hope that you continue to not only hold the line there in Minneapolis, but to continue to find those spaces for yourself to usher in that creative energy, to be the amazing poet that you are, to be the auntie, you know, because we at the point right now.
I'm there call, now.
You know what I mean? Listen, I'm there now fully. I am fully in auntie mode a lot of times, and okay. I am okay with it because so many of our you know, people need need that auntie and need someone who they can know that is fighting for us all and not just the ones who fit inside some pretty box.
Exactly. And they just need to be able to see. If you can see it, you can be it.
Absolutely.
And I know there's a lot of children right now who are like, wow, a trans woman is starring on Broadway. I can do that. You know, a black trans woman is leading the Minneapolis City Council. Like, I can do that.
Listen, let me tell you, I one thing that it warms my heart is that as I've been doing my music, and again, I've been doing that for a while, there have been other folks, obviously, like your Mila Jams, who like you now see that after they've been putting so much work into their career for so long, seeing it like pay off, seeing them doing big performances and great things. But one thing that I've been realizing that's been such warming my heart is from being on Pose and then coming off of Pose and seeing people and having people see me still make space for my own art that no one else is like green lighting or making, giving me studio time. I'm I'm literally taking my own money and resources to create this space. And then when I go and perform in trans-led spaces like the BTFA Collective and things like that, I can see from years going, the girls looking like, okay. And literally looking like, bitch, I could do that.
Yes.
And I can't tell you how much I live for that moment. I don't feel in any ways like, oh, they coming from, like any kind of, you know, I just feel like that is the purpose of this all, is for folks to look at my life and be like, you know what? I think I could do something like that. Or I can do.
Look at Miss Shea Diamond, honey. That girl
is amazing. Is an amazing singer, songwriter, crushing it. You know, like has been, you know, working with Sam Smith and all kind of folks, Justin Trainer. And, you know, so I try to promote her stuff every chance. And, you know, the funny thing is, and I'm just saying this just to say it, but like, folks don't know how big our community really is.
Right.
They and I'm glad that you said millions for a second there, because like folks really think that we are such a small population. But I know from back in 2012 it was when we were trying, when we were first doing the what we call the Trans 100. And remember
that? Oh my
that?
God, I forgot about that.
You know, and I just remembered the drama that happened when we first, the first year we did it, because people were, a lot of people were in their feelings because they were like, well, how did I not make the list? And
it's only 100 people, boo.
Well, that is just how much I realized that we did not know our community, because not only were there not people on the list that I, you know, maybe thought might have been on the list, but there were just so many people on the list I did not know.
Yeah.
And their work was just as valid.
Absolutely.
And strong and historical and all those things. So I think that what that told me is that
you
we need to
still be doing that list right now and still come up with 100 new people every year.
Right. Absolutely. And to be honest, you know, we do need to revisit those spaces. And I just know that, like, you know, there it was a struggle space, because sometimes when you're doing things across a very broad spectrum of identities of a community,
the arrows are coming, honey.
Baby, it's
knives
just so
come out.
It's so much. But you know what I think it is it's, I think what people need to understand, it's never about, sometimes I think folks always saw things as some brand that they could, that could be their claim to fame, right? Mm-hmm. Like something like the Trans 100, because we have the Out 100, we have all these different things or whatever.
Right.
But when the reality is, you are the visuals, baby.
Yeah. Exactly.
You are the claim to fame.
Right.
So that when you are the best chef in Minneapolis, or when you are the best congressperson or city council person or singer or whatever it is, it is that platform of who you are that gives you the position to amplify whatever you want to amplify. And I always try to point this out to people. In my Buddhist practice, there's this this phrase they say, become a celebrity of the mystic law. And what for us the mystic law is just the understanding that every person is equal and has access to enlightenment in their life. They don't need some intermediate person. They can do miraculous things with their life. So to become a celebrity of that fact is to be celebrated for the fact that you are yet another example we didn't even think about or see yet.
Wow.
You understand what I'm saying? Where no one is you. No one has come through the very specific fertile ground you navigated through. That was
there's only one person.
That was the fertile ground for you. Mm-hmm. And so if anything is my wish for this podcast is again for every person listening to wake up to now. Wake up to your life. Stop trying to numb yourself through it. Stop trying to distract yourself through it. And develop. When I say develop, that means I mean practice. I'm not expecting you to come to this moment in perfection because practice is perfection. So what I want us to start to do is get better at taking responsibility for our cities, for our country, starting with taking responsibility for your life. And what it means to do that, when I say take responsibility, I'm going to say this continuously through all the episodes, is to be able to respond. Responsibility. And so, Andrea, I want to say thank you for the ways in which you have took responsibility for Minneapolis and the ways that you have changed not only Black folks' life, but Black LGBTQ people's lives. And what we know that when you help marginalized people, life gets that much easier for everybody else. For everybody. So thank you for what you have done with now. I can't wait to see what you do with your your future now moments. Is there anything you would like to share with our folks just on maybe something you're working on right now, something that we need to know? What is an opportunity right now that we could be focusing on?
Well, here's the opportunity right now. Cause you know, I am quote the first Black woman in elected in the country. But, you know, you got to keep getting elected. So I got a re-election campaign coming up right now. It would be great if folks can help us out. My website is andrea-jenkins.com. You can go there. You can send us $5, $10, $15, whatever you can afford. But also, we need people to get on the phones and help us make phone calls.
But, Andrea, thank you for joining me now.
Thank you for inviting me now.
Absolutely. And we will be right back. Thank you again, Andrea Jenkins, for blazing a path for people like myself to come on through and stand proudly, continuing to do this work with you. And today's Buddhist breadcrumb is actually brought to you by my conversation with Andrea Jenkins, where we just organically discuss Buddhism. Take a listen. What I love about this podcast and just, again, the container and the context that I'm pushing this forward through is through my Buddhist perspective. And the thing is that one thing that I'm fortunate to know is a lot of Black Buddhists.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny because it's a much bigger community than I ever knew. But also, you know, we all have this moment when we think about Tina Turner and how Angela Bassett played her, and just the whole scene of chanting Nam-myoho-renge-kyo and how that activated her into being able to respond to the challenge that was in front of her and the life that was in front of her, and to find her voice, one that was already very clearly strong the moment she opened up her mouth. And so what I love about this is that it teaches us to understand that there is no separation between, we call it oneness and environment, and where there's no separation between you and the environment that you're in, and how it's a reflection. And sometimes I think that we as a culture and a society, we try to manipulate the reflection. We try to force it in a way, meaning like not just in the ways we co-create, not that. What I'm saying is, as we build neighborhoods and, you know, put up stores and do all the things, and as many people in our government or whatever want to tell us just how amazing the economy is doing and everybody's doing while we're still suffering, while people are still struggling to access the basics of daily life. And so what struck me so much, and it's so great that you even were able to witness and even remember that reflection of this moment happening, of when, you know, the riots are happening. And sometimes when these riots are happening, some folks don't know how to process what's happening.
Right.
And there's so much judgment around what's happening. And there's so many layers to unpack around all of that, but to have the windows in which so many of us stand in front of window shopping for our lives. Right. Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And seeing these almost like false reflections that tell us our lives will be more valuable with the things on the other side of that glass.
Yes.
But for the boards to go up and for the cardboard to then be the canvas that the community reflects itself upon, that's not lost on me. That's just not lost on me, how we will find a way to express what's really going on.
What's really going on.
All right. So simply put, the concept of oneness and environment is just so we make sure that we understand there is no separation between our environment and us. We have to see ourselves as part of the picture, whether that might be part of the solution or sometimes, you know, part of the problem. But to be able to see that reflection clearly and understand that if you want to change what you see in that reflection, then you might need to change yourself. So this week, take a moment and look at the reflection in your environment. And if there's anything that you want to change, find an opportunity to change maybe the way you think about it, or to change something about yourself for the better. Hey, no opportunity wasted.